Muslims in Iran, Iraq, and other countries hold mourning ceremonies to mark Ashura, the martyrdom anniversary of Imam Hussein, the grandson of Prophet Muhammad. The leader of the Lebanese resistance movement, Hezbollah, says that the presence of U.S. forces in the region is aimed at reviving the Daesh terrorist group. Former Malaysian Deputy Prime Minister Ismail Sabri Yaakob moves closer to forming the next government after securing a parliamentary majority. It's good to have you with us. Tens of thousands of Muslims have converged on the holy Iraqi city of Karbala to commemorate Ashura. That's the day marking the martyrdom anniversary of Imam Hussein, the grandson of Prophet Muhammad. Karbala is the resting place of Imam Hussein. Ceremonies in the city are the centerpiece of those held across the globe. Ashura marks the climax of the annual event held in the first 10 days of the lunar month of Muharram. Muslims across the world show their grief over the sufferings of Imam Hussein and his companions by holding processions and congregations. The Imam and 72 of his companions were martyred during the Battle of Karbala in 680 AD by the tyrant of their time. Iranians across the country have also commemorated the Ashura by holding mourning ceremonies while observing health guidelines. Well, earlier in the day, we're joined by the Imam of the Islamic House of Wisdom, Muhammad Elahi. He's explained about the message that Ashura mourning conveys and its significance.
If you see that in the day of Ashura, the power of Kitabullah were Itrat Rasulullah, the book and the Itra, Kitabullah were Itrati, is a combination of these two great messages. That first of all telling us, وَلَا تَغُولُوا لِمَنْ يُقْتَلُ فِي سَبِيلِ اللَّهِ أَمْوَاتِ. In another verse, وَلَا تَحْسَبَنَّ الَّذِينَ قُتِلُوا فِي سَبِيلِ اللَّهِ أَمْوَاتَ. Don't even say that Hussein is dead. Don't say that Abbas and Akbar and Qasim and Muslim and other martyrs of Karbala, they are dead. They are alive. They are still inspiring everyone who is looking for justice. And this is what made Ashura universal, that it's not only about religion, it is about kunu ahararan fi dunyakum. Go back to a liberation of your mind, to human dignity and human integrity. So we realize that this movement can guide us, can be a shining light for generations, for the whole world.
Now, at least three people have been killed and some 50 wounded in a bomb attack in Pakistan's eastern Punjab province. It occurred when a powerful roadside bomb targeted a mourning procession of Muslims. Women and children were among those wounded. Videos circulating on social media show police cars and ambulances rushing toward the site of the explosion. Several wounded people were seen waiting for help along the road. The Secretary General of Lebanon's Hezbollah resistance movement says the presence of American force in the region is aimed at reviving the Daesh terrorist group.
The governments in the region and the resistance groups are enough to eradicate Daesh, and there is no need for the U.S. assistance. There is evidence that American forces in the region are actually facilitating the revival of the terrorist group.
Now, Nasrallah said that Washington's claim of fighting Daesh in Syria is an utter lie, calling for the U.S. withdrawal from the Arab country. He said the U.S. failure in Afghanistan has made it clear that regional countries should not pin their hopes on the U.S., which he said is intending to keep its hegemonic grip on West Asia and its resources. The Hezbollah chief also described the Iraqi government's decision to expel U.S. troops as a significant achievement, saying it's the result of sacrifices made by resistance groups. He also urged all Muslims to stand by Palestinians and their resistance against the Israeli oppression. He said the resistance movement is ready to defend the Lebanese sovereignty.
On this Ashura Day, we want to make it clear to our enemies and friends that any development inside Lebanon or the region would not impact their strength, readiness, and steadfastness at the resistance movement. We have enough human resources and capabilities to face occupying powers and defend Lebanon's sovereignty.
Nasrallah also accused the United States of waging an economic war and a media campaign against Lebanon with the aim of serving the interests of the Tel Aviv regime. He touched upon the country's political crisis, rejecting allegations that Hezbollah was hampering efforts for the formation of a new government. On Lebanon's fuel crisis, Nasrallah said that Hezbollah has organized a shipment of fuel from Iran in order to alleviate the current shortage. The head of the Lebanese resistance movement warned the U.S. and Israel against any move to halt the delivery. He stressed that Hezbollah considers the fuel-carrying boat as Lebanese territory. Several people are reportedly killed during anti-Taliban rallies and a stampede in the eastern Afghan city of Assadabad, according to witnesses. The militants opened fire on protesters marking the country's Independence Day in the capital of Kunar province. The demonstrators waved Afghan flags and, according to some reports, tore down a white flag of the Taliban. Similar events were held in another eastern city, Jalalabad, where at least three protesters were killed on Wednesday. Meanwhile, gunshots have been heard in the capital, Kabul, where people were marking the 102nd anniversary of Afghanistan's independence from British rule. The U.S. president has defended the manner in which the American troops withdrew from Afghanistan, saying that chaos was inevitable.
No, I don't think it could have been handled in a way that we're going to go back in hindsight and look, but the idea that somehow there's a way to have gotten out without chaos ensuing, I don't know how that happens.
Now, Joe Biden added that the U.S. had a limited time frame to work within as the August 31st deadline for the troops' withdrawal from Afghanistan was drawn near. He noted that he had to comply with the agreement that his predecessor, Donald Trump, had negotiated with the Taliban in 2020, or the U.S. would have deployed even more troops to the Central Asian nation. Biden blamed the fall of Kabul on Afghan officials fleeing the country and the U.S.-trained Afghan military surrendering to the Taliban. Meanwhile, Pentagon officials say that they had seen no clear indication that the Afghan capital would fall to the Taliban in a matter of days.
The Afghan security forces, did you feel that they were ever up to this fight, or did you not see this coming, that they were not up to the fight?
Well, I stood behind this podium and it said that the Afghan security forces had the capacity, and by that I mean they had the training, the size, the capability to defend their country. This comes down to an issue of will and leadership. And no, I did not, nor did anyone else, see a collapse of an army that size in 11 days.
Now, General Miles said that U.S. intelligence had indicated that multiple scenarios were possible, including the collapse of the army in weeks, months, or years. He said that the priority now lies in evacuating American forces and citizens. Speaking of the same presser, U.S. Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin said that there are around 4,500 American forces in African capital Kabul to help with the evacuation. He, however, noted the U.S. is nowhere close to what it wants to be in the evacuation operation from the Kabul airport. In the wake of the recent developments in Afghanistan, Iran has seen a steady influx of Afghan refugees. Iranian border police set up temporary camps alongside the country's eastern border with Afghanistan to host the inbound refugees. Yusuf Jalali was there and followed a report from the Iran-Afghan border.
Panicked and distressed, Afghans continue to seek refuge in Iran as they face a dim future in their country. As ex-Afghan President Ashraf Ghani fled his country and ceded power to the Taliban, Iran's eastern borders have seen an unabated influx of Afghans who seek a new life in Iran.
This is the Iranian-Afghan border. Afghan refugees have just crossed into Iran, a country they call it a second home.
Some used to be wealthy businessmen who have lost their possessions in the conflict, and others are simply concerned about the future of their children. But all wind up here in this camp, where they have to wait for a decision by Iranian authorities whether to let them in or send them back to their country.
I ask the Iranian government to allow us to stay here until the situation improves in our country. If we were not forced to, we would have not deserted our homeland.
I have nothing to lose. There is no future for me and my children in Afghanistan. I came to Iran as my last hope to build a future for my two kids.
How can I raise my kids in my country? My husband has lost everything. We spent all we have to get to Iran.
Iran's border police have set up makeshift camps alongside the country's eastern border with Afghanistan to temporarily accommodate the inbound refugees. Milak crossing point in Sistan and Balochistan is one of the border crossings that has seen the entry of more than 600 Afghans every day since the Taliban began advancing in Afghanistan. The Iranian armed forces say they have received incoming Afghans with open arms, providing them with all the relief items such as masks and disinfectants, food and medicine.
Over the past week, Iran's armed forces have spared no effort to accommodate our Afghan brothers and sisters who have sought refuge in our country. It's our duty first as human beings and then as Muslims who share the same language and culture to offer services to our troubled neighbor.
The collapse of the Afghan army and the government began with U.S. President Joe Biden's implementation of his predecessor's planned troop withdrawal after two decades of presence on the Afghan soil, something which Afghans say has yielded nothing but destruction and bloodshed for their country.
The U.S. invaded our country in 2001 on the pretext of promoting peace and security, but after 20 years, it left us with nothing but misery, poverty, unemployment, and now displacement.
Iran is already home to some 3 million Afghan refugees and economic migrants, the majority of whom are unregistered. Now with a dream for a bright future, these people hope that Iran's border will separate them from their tumultuous past. Yusuf Jalali from Iran-Afghanistan border.
Now in Malaysia, former Deputy Prime Minister Ismail Sabri Yaakob has secured a parliamentary majority, moving closer to forming a new government. According to local media, Ismail Sabri has received the backing of 114 out of 220 lawmakers. King Al Sultan Abdullah has summoned the supporting lawmakers to his palace to verify their candidate. If appointed, Sabri would mark the return of the United Malaya's National Organization Party to leadership 3 years after it lost a general election over corruption allegations. On Monday, Prime Minister Muhyiddin Yassin stepped down after losing parliamentary majority. The resignation threw the country into fresh crisis amid a worsening COVID outbreak and weakening the economy. Speaking of COVID-19, Iran's related restrictions, which began on Monday, will be in place until Saturday. They include a ban on road travel. The lockdown also requires all non-essential businesses and offices to shut down. Meantime, health officials say that the coronavirus deaths passed the 100,000 mark, with 564 new fatalities recorded on Thursday. They also reported over 31,000 new infections, raising the overall caseload to more than 4.5 million. Iran has grappled with a fifth wave of COVID-19 triggered by the highly contagious Delta strain. Authorities have sped up the vaccination campaign to contain the surge. Australia continues to struggle with the coronavirus outbreak as the country logs its biggest daily rise in cases. Officials recorded 754 infections on Thursday, with New South Wales state accounting for the bulk of them, including one death. The figure marks a record rise in cases in the state for a second consecutive day. The Premier of New South Wales now saying the lockdown will remain in place there until the end of August. Meanwhile, police have been enforcing lockdowns and assisting in aid distribution across the state capital, Sydney. Restrictions were imposed after a Delta variant-driven outbreak in the city in mid-June. So far, over 50% of the state's population has received at least one dose of the vaccine. Meantime, Mexico has reported 940 more fatalities from the pandemic, bringing the total death toll to over 250,000. The country also had almost 29,000 cases in one day, the highest daily tally since the pandemic began. Meanwhile, Brazil reported more than 41,000 new cases and 1,000 daily deaths. The South American country, which has the world's second deadliest outbreak after the U.S., has so far logged 571,000 deaths. Thousands of people have hit the streets of the Argentine capital, Buenos Aires, to protest the government of President Alberto Fernandez. Now, protesters marched across the city, blocking several roads and highways that were calling for measures against poverty and unemployment while demanding a pay rise. The demonstrations were organized by left-wing unions and organizations. The Latin American nation has undergone a severe economic crisis for years, which has been deepened further by the coronavirus pandemic. The government has already announced the relaxation in COVID-related restrictions to reactivate the economy ahead of the legislative elections in November. The president has also pledged to recuperate jobs and recover income. That's a wrap for this news bulletin. Goodbye.
Today, 10th of Muharram, is the day of the heartrending tragedy of Karbala, the day of victory of blood over sword. On this day, in the year 61 AH, the chief of martyrs, Imam Hussein, peace be upon him, along with 72 of his loyal companions, were martyred in the plain of Karbala by the army of tyrant Yazid. We here at Arabi English Radio express our heartfelt condolences to all our listeners on the martyrdom anniversary of the Chief of Martyrs, Abu Abdullah al-Hussein, peace be upon him.
In the limelight.
The fall of Kabul has reopened divisions over immigration in European countries as government leaders brace themselves for the inevitable surge in refugees. We have prepared for you an article written by Angela Giuffrida. The piece is titled "Expected Afghan Influx Reopens Divisions Over Refugees in Europe." The article has been published by the British newspaper The Guardian. Kabul has reopened divisions over immigration in European countries as government leaders brace themselves for an inevitable surge in refugees. Thousands of Afghans, among them the President Ashraf Ghani, rushed to the airport in Kabul in an attempt to flee Afghanistan after the Taliban took control of the capital. Three people are reported to have died in the chaos at the airport. Leaders of Albania and Kosovo claimed they had accepted an American request to temporarily host political refugees seeking entry to the United States. It comes amid concerns that NATO members are not responding quickly enough to evacuate Afghan citizens who are in danger of reprisals from the Taliban. Albania, a country of 4.2 million people in southeastern Europe, is taking in hundreds of refugees. The country's Prime Minister, Edi Rama, said, "I'm devastated to see people left behind and want to give them at least the possibility to breathe again." He added, "We know what it's like to live under a dictatorship and what it's like to be a foreigner seeking shelter somewhere. It's about who we are. It's an honor and a duty to do this." Edi Rama said he could not understand how richer countries can turn their backs. He added, "This clashes with the values we all preach. Albania can't solve the problem, but we also don't want to be part of it." About 30,000 Afghan citizens have left the country each day for the past 10 days, the majority traveling to Iran or to Pakistan by land. Christopher Hain, a professor of law and immigration policy at Lewis University in Rome, Italy, said, "With the uncertainty and instability in Afghanistan, it is clear that there will be an exodus and Western countries need to act quickly." Italian Prime Minister Mario Draghi said on Monday, 16th of August, that Italy is committed to protecting Afghan citizens who have collaborated with our mission, and the country is working with European partners for a solution to the crisis which protects human rights, especially those of women. About 100 Italian nationals and embassy staff were evacuated from Kabul on Sunday night, arriving at Fiumicino Airport in Rome on Monday afternoon. There were also several Afghan citizens who had collaborated with Italian forces on board. An Afghan medic told the Italian press, "The Taliban is searching for people house to house. There are thousands whose lives are at risk." Luigi Di Maio, Italy's foreign minister, told Corriere della Sera on Sunday, 15th of August, the priority was evacuating Italian citizens, but that we cannot think of abandoning the Afghan people after 20 years. Luciana Lamorghese, Italy's interior minister, said the country was planning to evacuate Afghan interpreters and medical staff who had assisted the Italian forces. With the far-right League being a key partner in Mario Draghi's broad coalition government, it remains to be seen if Italy will succeed in accepting more Afghan citizens. Matteo Salvini, the leader of the far-right party, who blocked migrant rescue ships during his 14-month stint as interior minister, tweeted, "In Kabul, after the cowardly flight of Western countries, the flag of Afghanistan militants returns. Terrorism, violence, fear, and illegal immigration are on the horizon." France's defense minister, Florence Parly, said on Monday the country would first evacuate its nationals and then Afghan colleagues from Kabul to a base in Dubai. The French Defense Minister, Florence Parly, said, "We are planning to carry out the first rotation between now and the end of this Monday, 16th of August." Adding, the evacuees were French nationals who remained in Kabul, but also people under our protection. Major German newspapers and broadcasters have urged German Chancellor Angela Merkel to implement an emergency visa program to take in Afghan journalists who worked for them over the past 20 years. Deutsche Press Agentur DPA news agency said the lives of these freelance staff are now in acute danger. Austria said on Sunday, 15th of August, it would continue its policy of deporting rejected Afghan asylum seekers. The country was among six European Union states that recently insisted their right to expel failed Afghan asylum seekers should be maintained. Three of these countries, that is Denmark, Germany and the Netherlands, have since changed course, saying they would suspend deportations to Afghanistan. France has also suspended deportations of rejected Afghan asylum seekers. Austria's Interior Minister Karl Nehammer described banning deportations as a pull factor for illegal migration, which only fuels the inconsiderate and cynical business of smugglers and organized criminals. He added, those who need protection must receive it in a country that is closest to their country of origin. As Minister of the Interior, I am primarily responsible for the people living in Austria. Above all, this means protecting social peace and the welfare state over the long term. A survey by the Austrian newspaper Österreich showed a few Austrians supported their government's tough stance. European Union countries fear a repeat of 2015 and early 2016, where more than 1 million migrants, mostly from Syria, but also from Afghanistan and Iraq, arrived in Europe, sparking political turbulence within European member states and across the European bloc. The response was to make deals with Turkey and Libya to stem the flow of migrants. Heinz said, but now they need to open their eyes and take responsibility, adding, they need to quickly organize for Afghan citizens, including many women who collaborated with European countries in Afghanistan, to be airlifted out of the country as soon as possible.
You're listening to Hosseiniya from IRIB English Radio by Sayyid Abbas Rezavian. Labbaik Ya Hussein.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alayka Ya Aba Abdullah. Peace and salutations upon you, O Master of Martyrs, Ya Sayyid al-Shuhada. Today is the day of Ashura. It is the day of lamenting. It is the day of crying. It is the day that our Imam Mahdi, the 12th Imam, cries the most out of anybody else in this world. We talked about benefiting from Ziyarat Ashura, and we talked about the final position which we reach if we incorporate Ziyarat Ashura in our lives, that is reaching Al-Maqam Al-Mahmud, the praiseworthy station, the station of the Prophet, the station of Imam Hussein alayhi salam. It is important for us to know on such a day that when we will talk about the station of the Ahlul Bayt alayhi salam, that we don't separate Imam Hussein alayhi salam from Imam Mahdi. On such a day, we need to know that who is the one that is crying the most? Who is the one that is can see what exactly happened to Imam Hussein on this day? It is Imam Mahdi, Ajjalallahu ta'ala farajah. We read in Ziyarat Nahiyah, one of the ziyarats attributed to Imam Mahdi, that he says, فَلْأَنْدُبَنَّكَ صَبَاحًا وَمَسَاءً. I will therefore lament you morning and evening, Imam Hussein. Imam Mahdi says, I'll cry for you day and night. وَلِأَبْكِيَنَّ عَلَيْكَ بَدَلَ الدُّمُوءِ دَمًا. And will weep blood in places of tears. This is haqiqat. This is a reality. He is not metaphorically speaking.
Imam Mahdi is crying blood for Imam Hussein. When we look and incorporate this Maqam al-Mahmud, and we say that who has Maqam al-Mahmud right now on this earth, it is Imam Mahdi. And we say that Imam Mahdi's grief and crying is the crying that is accepted. The Quran talks about those that have perseverance and those that have forbearance and those that have patience. And when musibat comes upon them, he gives them reward for this musibat. He gives them reward for this calamity. And there's a verse of the Quran. It says, "Ulaika alayhim salawatu min rabbihim." For those that say, "Inna lillah wa inna ilayhi raji'un," those that say, "Indeed we belong to God and indeed to Him we will return," salawat of God will be upon them. The salutations of God will be upon them. Min rabbihim wa rahma. And their mercy, His mercy will be upon them. So who deserves the mercy and salutations of Allah the most during this affliction? It is Imam Mahdi. Therefore, we can think of the day of Ashura similar to like the night of Qadr, the night of power, the night of destiny. That when we say all the angels descend, تَنَزَّلُ الْمَلَائِكَ, all the angels descend every year on who? On Imam Mahdi. They bring all the events when they descend to who? To Imam Mahdi. And he is the source and he is the core of Laylatul Qadr. And therefore, when our decrees want to be finalized, it is linked to Imam Mahdi. When we want to connect to God in the night of Qadr, it is linked to Imam Mahdi. In the same way that Imam Mahdi is also the core of the day of Ashura. Because he is the one that is truly grieving. He is the one that is truly sad. He is the one whose azadari or matam or sorrow and crying is accepted. Therefore, whatever blessings Allah is going to give us and the followers of the Ahlul Bayt first goes to Imam Mahdi, ajallallahu ta'ala faraja, then spreads out to us. Therefore, on the day of Ashura, it is the day that we completely turn our soul and our minds to Imam Mahdi, the true Musab, the true person that has affliction for Imam Hussein alayhi salam. He truly knows what happened to Imam Hussein. If the reality of Ashura were to befall us and we would be able to see it completely how it is, we could not bear it. Only one person can bear Ashura and seeing it truly in this world, and that is Imam Mahdi, ajallahu ta'ala faraja. Therefore, we need to connect to Imam Mahdi on such a day, and we use Imam Hussein and his movement and Ziyarat Ashura. It is a bab, it is a door. We go through the door of Imam Hussein. Into this door, we reach our own Imam, Imam Mahdi. May Allah, inshallah, on such a day, expedite his return and make us of his true and sincere followers, inshallah.
Standing here alone on a land so far from home, a place where angels pray. While innocent children die, Hussein has said goodbye, praying some of them survive the torture and the heat. They can't bear to watch him.
Today is the day of Ashura. It is the day of grief. It is the day of sorrow. And we're talking about that nobody is as sorrowful and as grievous as Imam Mahdi, ajallahu ta'ala faraja, on such a day. He is the true Musab. He is the one that the calamity has befell upon him. Because he sees, we hear about Ashura, we read maqtals, we read the way that Imam Hussein's companions are martyred on such a day, but he sees it, he witnesses it. So our question today is this, is that how can we connect to Imam Mahdi? How can we connect to Imam Hussein on such a day? There's a very famous khutbah. It's called Khutbah of Ma'rifat Binuraniyat, meaning that you have cognition and understanding and knowledge through nur. It means that there's another faculty of gaining knowledge besides the mind and intellect, that you can gain knowledge through the spirit. You can gain knowledge through nur and through light. Once Abu Dhar comes in this tradition, comes to Salman of Farsi, and asks him, what is this ma'rifat binuraniyat? What is this understanding and knowledge through nur? So Salman and Abu Dhar, they approach Imam Ali alayhi salam, and they ask him. Imam Ali teaches him and says, Ya Salman wa ya Jundab, which is the name of Abu Dhar, Qala labbaik, we are ready, Ya Amir al-Mu'minin, we are here. Innahu la yastakmilu ahadun al-Iman hatta ya'rifani kunha ma'rifati binuraniya. Basically, this is a good question you ask. Nobody will reach the reality of faith unless he attains and recognizes me through nur. You have to know me through nur. You have to attain knowledge of me through your spirit. فَإِذَا عَرَفَنِي بِهَذِهِ الْمَعْرِفَةِ فَقَدْ إِمْتَحَنَ اللَّهُ قَلْبَهُ لِلْإِيمَانِ. If God gives somebody and tests him with true faith, gives them this nur, he will be given true faith, his light, his chest will be expounded. Then he tells him this, وَمَنْ قَسَّرَ عَنْ مَعْرِفَةِ ذَلِكَ فَهُوَ شَكٌ مُرْتَبٌ. And whoever does not understand me through light, he will be in doubt. So brothers and sisters, we are being taught from Imam Adi in this hadith that there's another faculty of realizing and connecting to the Holy Prophet, to the Ahlul Bayt, through nur and through light. That is what happens when you go to their ziyarah. That is what is happening on the day of Ashura when you're connecting to him. You're connecting to Imam Mahdi. Then in the tradition it says, Ya Salman, Ya Jundab. And they say, Labbaik, we are here, we're listening, we're ready for you, Ya Amir al-Mu'mineen, O Commander of the Faithful. Ma'rifati binuraniya ma'rifatullah. Whoever has known me through light has known God. The more you know the Ahlul Bayt, this cognition that you have, you will know Allah. وَمَعْرِفَةُ اللَّهِ بِنُورَانِيَّ. And the more you know Allah, the more you witness him with your spirituality, the more you witness me. وَهُوَ الدِّينُ الْخَالِصِ. Do you want دِينُ الْخَالِصِ? Do you want pure religion? It is understanding and connecting and having cognition of the Ahlul Bayt through the spirit. That is دِينُ الْخَالِصِ. That is pure religion. So on the day of Ashura, we connect to the true person that is crying for Imam Hussein, that is Imam Mahdi. We connect to Imam Hussein alayhi salam. We connect to the children of Imam Hussein, the companions of Imam Hussein that were martyred on such a day. And we take our spirit and our spirituality to Karbala. And we ask Allah one dua this day, and that is to bring back our Imam and to make us of his true followers and companions, inshallah.
Is there any other way to get familiar with Islam besides mainstream media? Try IRIB English Radio. log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
In the limelight.
Three U.S. Central Intelligence Agency officers have reported serious symptoms of the Havana syndrome since December of last year, following spying assignments abroad, requiring treatment at the Walter Reed Medical Hospital in the United States capital, Washington. One case was reported within the past week. We now present you an article written by staff writers of the New York Times. The piece is titled, Mysterious Brain Injuries Hitting U.S. Diplomats, Military Officials, Spies Creates Panic. A shocking and potentially dangerous ailment known as the Havana syndrome, mostly affecting U.S. diplomats, spies, and defense officials, has been reported in the United States in recent weeks. At least 130 incidents of mysterious brain injuries, some of them in past few weeks, have sent shockwaves across the country at a time when it is emerging from the COVID-19 pandemic. The U.S. Central Intelligence Agency, the CIA, CIA officers have reported serious symptoms of the Havana syndrome since December of last year, following spying assignments abroad, requiring treatment at the Walter Reed Medical Hospital in the U.S. capital, Washington. One case was reported in the past week alone. According to the New York Times report citing four current and former officials, in one case from 2019, not previously reported, a military officer serving overseas pulled his vehicle into an intersection, then was overcome by nausea and headaches. His son, sitting in the car, was shock-stricken. Both received medical attention, though it is not clear whether they suffered long-term debilitating effects. The report said the episode distressed officials in both the Trump and Biden administrations, prompting them to launch a probe. The report further states the number of cases within the CIA, the State Department, the U.S. Defense Department, the Pentagon, and elsewhere have sparked concern in the Biden administration, adding that the initial publicity confirmed cases have been concentrated in China and in Cuba, and numbering to about 60. According to the National Security Council, some have suffered long-term brain injuries, including debilitating headaches, while general symptoms involve personnel experiencing sensory phenomena, such as sound, pressure, or heat, along with or followed by physical symptoms, such as sudden onset of vertigo, nausea, and headache or neck pain. U.S. administration has not been able to determine who or what is responsible for the shocking episodes. However, the New York Times report claims some Pentagon officials believe Russia's military intelligence agency is involved in it. Moscow has repeatedly denied any such involvement. Amanda Shoup, a spokeswoman for the Office of the Director of National Intelligence, is quoted as saying by the New York Times, "As of now, we have no definitive information about the cause of these incidents, and it is premature and irresponsible to speculate." The report states the Biden administration is trying to show officials that they are taking the issue seriously, at the same time trying to prevent panic from spreading, either inside the government or amongst the public. According to the U.S. National Security Council spokesperson, Emily Horn, the council has begun an intelligence review. The report notes the CIA has formed a new targeting cell to try to gather information about the episodes, how they occurred, and who is responsible, adding that the cells aim to operate with a similar rigor and intensity to the group expanded by the agency sometime after the 11th of September attacks to hunt down Osama bin Laden. In a report released in December, the U.S. National Academy of Sciences said a microwave weapon probably caused the brain injuries. The severity of the mysterious brain injuries on the U.S. military officials and spies has ranged widely, with some victims complaining of chronic, potentially irreversible symptoms and pain, suggesting potentially permanent brain injury. Physicians at the Walter Reed Medical Hospital have even warned government officials that some victims would be tempted to end their lives. According to a report in a closed-door meeting of the Senate Intelligence Committee last month, senators accused the CIA, the Central Intelligence Agency, of doing too little to investigate the mysterious episodes. It said during the Trump administration, some in the agency said there was little intelligence showing a foreign power was responsible, and argued that it made little sense analytically for Russia or another foreign intelligence service to make unprovoked attacks on Americans. Others doubted the cause of the brain injuries. The New York Times report states that the mystery first drew attention when diplomats and CIA officers working in Havana, Cuba in 2016 felt sick with vertigo, nausea, and headaches. Similar episodes began occurring the next year in Guangzhou in China. And last October, the New York Times reported that as early as 2017, another cohort of CIA officers traveling in a variety of countries, including in Russia, had said they were the likely victims of attacks and reported similar symptoms. Lawmakers and the Trump administration's National Security Council grew increasingly frustrated last year with State Department's and the CIA's handling of the incidents. Robert C. O'Brien, President Trump's National Security Advisor, and Matthew Pottinger, his deputy, had begun working in early 2020 to redouble efforts by their aides to understand the mysterious episodes and to get the Pentagon more involved. But their staff members ran into frustration getting the CIA, the State Department, and other agencies to share details about injured personnel, in part because of federal protections on health data. The report adds White House officials thought the investigation, in which the CIA had been the lead agency, had run into a dead end.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1520 to 1620 UTC on the following frequencies. Shortwave, 41 meters, 7,410 kilohertz for Indian subcontinent, and FM, 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or BAT 5 and via Internet. Our Internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program P.O. Box 19395-6767 Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.
Send me your mercy, send me your peace, or I am lost for sure.
Hadith of the day.
Here I am, yearning for your cure. This humble servant will be diverted from you no more, no more, no more.
You're listening to the program Hadith of the Day on IRIB English Radio with Sheikh Yasser Ibrahim, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom.
A'udhu billahi min ash-shaytan ar-rajim. Bismillahi ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Alhamdulillahi Rabbil Alameen. وصلى الله على سيدنا ونبينا ومولانا أبي القاسم المصطفى محمد وعلى أهل بيته الطيبين الطاهرين المعصومين السلام عليك يا أبا عبد الله السلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته dear listeners welcome to another episode of Hadith of the Day on IRIB English Radio today is the 10th of Muharram The day of Ashura, a day of grief, a day when Muslims, or as in some traditions, every single creation of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala is grieving to an extent that even inanimate objects, stones, soil, and the like turn red. Some say, you know, it was actual blood. And we have even today, in certain places of the world, these type of things happening till today. And it's an amazing thing that this event and the effect that this one event had on the entire system of creation. But it was not something that, you know, was not within the system, so to say. It was something that was already within the system. It was going to happen. And we can see this from the traditions of the Holy Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa alayhi wa sallam, that are found in both Sunni and Shia books, especially the one about the Holy Prophet and Umm Salama, a very profound tradition, that one. And this tradition that we will share with our dear listeners today from Amir al-Mu'mineen Ali ibn Abi Talib alayhi salam. Imam Ali alayhi salam was with one of his companions, or rather a companion found the Imam, and with the Imam was Imam al-Husayn alayhi salam. They were sitting, and the Imam was sitting next to Imam Ali alayhi salam. So Imam Ali alayhi salam tapped the shoulder of Husayn alayhi salam and said that he will be killed and no one will help him. So the companion of the Imam says, O commander of the believers, O commander of the faithful, Ya Amir al-Mu'mineen, I swear to Allah that life would become miserable if that happened. And it did happen. But obviously the companion, you know, was not around at that time. And the Imam tells him this. The Imam says, verily it will happen. And therefore we see that, you know, it is definitely something that within the system of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala's creation, that this event that had such effects both on the natural side of things, as we saw the, until today it happens, the trees, the soil, the stones, the rocks, the animals mourning according to many of the traditions. But it was us who the Imam gave his life for. And if we do not on this day try to change and try and put our steps in the steps of the Imam alayhi salam, then we have not done anything. We have neglected the Imam and the sacrifice that the Imam has made. It's up to us to put our footsteps and exactly what the Imam did. For that is the only sirat, that is the sirat al-mustaqim. We ask Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala to enable us to benefit from this day of Muharram, from this day of Ashura, and the rest of the month of Muharram, and to make us of the true lamenters of Imam al-Husayn alayhi salam, and the true supporters of the final light, Imam al-Sahib al-Asri wal-Zaman. Inshallah, until next time. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah wa barakatuh.
That was the program Hadith of the Day on IRIB English Radio with Sheikh Yasser Ibrahim, a graduate of Islamic Seminary.